You're listening in to a recorded phone call that I made as I continue to conduct my fakeology research. It's unedited, unscripted, and may have a few nuggets of information you may find interesting. I always ask permission to record calls I make. Listen in to our weekly broadcast most Saturday nights at 9:11 p.m. at fakeologist.com. Now, on with the call. Today is September 16th, 2013, and I had an introductory call with Robert Newman, who is investigating Mozart. Here's the call.
The whole thing was just full of fake images and, you know, false stuff. Yeah, it's no doubt about it.
No,
yeah,
I was under the impression that Simon Shack did all of September Clues.
Simon Shack, yeah, well, Simon Shack, well, where's Simon Shack? He's not American, is he?
No, he's actually Norwegian, but he lives in Rome. But what is
Scandinavian?
It? Yeah. But yeah, I've talked to Simon many times. I've had him on my show.
So Simon, in those days, in the early days of 9/11, in the early days of 9/11, there were a lot of people picking up stuff.
Oh no, I don't discount that. I don't discount that at all. I'm just saying Simon Shack is the one that put together September Clues. Where he got all this stuff? Yeah, sure. Maybe it's other people's research as well. I don't know, but
no, it was a brilliant production by Simon. You know, he put together, but all of the inconsistencies had to be seen by different people, you know. And,
I agree, absolutely.
And so he was the central point for all of this analysis, you know. Some of it was frame by frame. And there was an Australian who was the first to come up with the no planes idea, which everybody rubbished, you know. There were no planes, but it sounded ridiculous. But I think it's absolutely right. But, everybody's got their opinions about 9/11, but that's what started me off. I was always a conspiracy theorist. I mean, it's the only way to stay sane these days is to believe that the world is very different from the public domain, right? So everything's fake, basically.
I don't like to use the word conspiracy theorist anymore because they've essentially taken the word away from us.
Sure. Conspiracy facts, yeah.
Why I chose the word fakeologist.
Fakeologist, that's good. I like it.
Because nobody, it's a new word. It's not in the dictionary. It hasn't been corrupted and taken over. Maybe one day it will be. But right now, it's actually a good conversation starter. So most people understand the etymology of fakeologist. They can put the two words together, the two parts of the word together. They can see it clearly. So that's why I chose it, and it does get some questions. So then you quickly explain, well, there's media fakery all around us, and they're using it, the controllers use it to manipulate.
Absolutely. Somebody said, hey, Robert, you know this etymology, how deep does it go? I said, how deep do you want to go? He said, well, give me the first etymological clue. I said, certainly. Do you know the word government? He said, yes, government. Everybody knows government. To govern, what does that mean? He said, well, if you govern, you're ruling over something. I said, okay, govern meant. What is the meant?
Actually, govern also means reign over. Reign over. Yeah.
To reign over the mind, isn't it?
That's right.
The government. He said, you're not one of these guys who doesn't believe in government. I said, no, but you got two kinds of government. One of them you're serving the government. The other one, the government is serving you. And I prefer the second version myself. You know, I don't care. I don't care. I got opinions, and I'm happy to have opinions, same as you.
Yeah.
I think you're right. Everything you're talking about moon landings. It's all fake. I tell you, Ema, if you ever need a phone-in program, I've got a subject that you haven't covered this. And how about this one?
Yeah.
The revolving Earth.
Oh, yeah. No, Simon Shack has been going into that whole discussion about the flat. I'm questioning the whole, the shape of the Earth. We're questioning who goes around who. What are the stars? What are the planets? Yeah, I'm at the point now, Robert, that I'm having a hard time believing anything that I've been told, because I'm of the opinion that 9/11 was the biggest media hoax of our generation, maybe not yours. You sound a little older than myself.
I'm in my late 50s, so you could insult me and it doesn't hurt me anymore.
No,
I agree. I think 9/11 was the greatest psyops ever pulled off.
I think so.
I think so. But the moon landing was probably the start of the. And then did you know, Ema, you should do a program on the recent Olympic Games in London that never happened.
Yeah.
How about that one?
What happened? What were we shown? What were we shown?
What you were shown from the stadium, because, you know, the Olympic Games is divided into different events, right?
Yes.
Some of the events were happening in the stadium, but some of them were happening at other venues. The Olympic stadium itself was empty for the whole of the Olympic Games.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them.
There was media fakery at the Beijing opening ceremony.
I think that was almost widely known how they were doing certain things to alter appearances, changing the color of the sky, that kind of thing. That was almost accepted by people, really. It was almost accepted. Well,
how about this one? That if you play back even on YouTube, go back to the YouTube opening ceremony of the London Olympic Games. 3 or 4 minutes in, you get the first shots of the stadium. It's completely empty, but nobody seems to notice it as they zoom down and eventually they arrive at the crowd and all. Let's just take one infallible evidence that it's a fake. The whole nothing. How it happened is another question, but look at this one. The 100 meters, men's 100 meters, was pulled from the transmission to North America a minute before it was due to be broadcast. Did you know that?
No. Yeah, I'll be honest. I couldn't care less about the Olympics. I think it's a giant fraud.
No.
And I did not pay it. The only thing that you... I believe I saw some parts of was the opening occult ceremony, because it was so over the top that it had me cringing the whole time.
I bet I've got something. I've got an article. I want to send it to you here on the opening ceremony. I took these opening ceremony Olympic. Here's a PDF that I read.
Sounds like we're gonna have to have you on the show. Yeah. We're gonna have to have you on the show this Saturday.
Well, I'm just gonna send you an article. Look at this. This is an article I wrote for my Dutch friend.
It sounds like you're a kindred spirit.
We are. I saw this stuff, and when I researched it, wow! Did you know that the whole thing. Just have a look at this. Let it speak for itself. This thing here.
Yeah.
Here's a PDF.
By the way, are you far away from Robert? Are you far away from your microphone? It's your voice is muffled.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's a little better. Your voice was a little muffled.
All right, hang on.
Do you have a headset?
I've got it. I'm wearing a headset.
Oh, okay.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Right. Okay. I'm going to send you this. Yeah. Have a look at that.
Okay.
You will.
I will.
And then we'll get it. We'll get into.
This is fascinating. This is great. Where you been all this time? Are you on any forums? I never see your stuff anywhere.
Yeah, I walk around. I walk around anonymously because, like you, I'm a hard man to pin down, mate. So
no, but I was wondering if have you seen my forum before?
No, never. No.
Yeah, I was just curious. Well, you got to get a username. Just log into my forum, and you can. We have other. We have sub forums where you can start your own topics. It would be fascinating. You could post some stuff. I'd really like to see some of this stuff.
Well, just read that Olympic ceremony. I'm going to talk about music in a few minutes if you've got time.
I'm just waiting on somebody, so we can chat until that person comes by. It's still downloading right now. It's just two more minutes. I'm on a slightly slow connection here.
You might be interested in that.
Yeah, I'm looking. It's a coming down. It's a big file, 9 megabytes. Hello.
I studied the history of music. Hello.
Actually, you know what?
Hello.
I'm going to... Can you just... Hello? Ima, or Robert,
yes.
Can you email that to me? Can you email it to me? Because it's choking the bandwidth. I have limited bandwidth right now. Hello?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just...
Yeah, I can.
No, I can't look at... It's because the file is choking off my bandwidth right now. I'm on metered bandwidth at where I am right now.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so if you could email it to me, I'll grab it. You got my,
I don't have your email, no.
I'm going to give it to you. You know what? I'm going to put it in the Skype chat. Just email me at this address, okay?
Sure, there you go. I'll do it after
we speak. See that?
Yeah, fine. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, just email that, but give me the, I just want to go over a few really, some points really swiftly with you while I have you, and we can go into depth. What is your opinion of 9/11? That to me is my litmus test for people as to
what are you asking me what happened on 9/11?
Yes.
I believe 9/11 was destroyed by an energy. These buildings were brought down, except Building 7. Building 7 is different, but
yeah.
The North and South towers were brought down by energy weapons.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that?
All right, well, about 200 reasons.
No, but why have we seen energy weapons in the past? Being used?
Have you seen energy weapons? I had never seen them. I wasn't aware that they were that sophisticated, but if you reach any other conclusion, I'd like to hear of it.
Okay. Okay, I'll tell you mine. Mine is clear on my blog at fakeologist.com, but I'll tell you in a minute. I just want to know what your opinion was.
Okay, I worked for many years. I mean, I'm in my late 50s. I worked for over 20 years in construction contracts.
Yes.
That's how I got into law. And I know about steel work and basic structures.
Okay.
If the floors of that building really collapsed, the vertical steelwork would still be standing up quarter of a mile into the air.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you have to suspend your common sense to believe that this building collapsed.
Yes.
There was no debris pile. And then they came up with the story that the steel was shipped out to China. That's just a lie.
Right.
The steel was evaporated. Why do you think people were trying to climb down the outside of the building?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. Is it normal for human beings to try and climb down the outside of a quarter of a mile high skyscraper?
Mm-hmm.
There must have been some compelling reason why those people tried to get out of that building. The answer was quite simple. The building was literally boiling. Well, it was disintegrating. The steel was being vaporized.
And has that ever happened before that you know of?
Yes, it has happened, but not on a building.
Oh, okay.
Not on a building. Where is this? Okay, look at it logically. If these floors really pancaked into a huge pile, well, where is the vertical steelworks, which is stuck in foundations a quarter of a mile under the top of the building? You still have them sticking up into the air. Are you seriously believing that all of these collapse instantaneously at the same moment? This is ridiculous.
Yes.
See what I mean? I mean, it just... it happened not just once, but twice. Are you... that a hollow plane filled with... what's the word? Kerosene, because that's what jet fuel is.
Yes.
The kerosene is in the wings of the aircraft.
Yes.
Not only did the aircraft supposedly enter the reinforced building, it was insured against any such crash, but the wings would have snapped off. The kerosene would have exploded outside of the building, as you see in the official images, right? You see the big ball of kerosene exploding outside the building. So where does the heat come from to melt the rest of the building?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't. It's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. What happened? What? Okay, building. I can talk about 9/11 as long as you want because I studied it for several years. They had a false flag story. They had several cover stories for 9/11. Several. Uh-huh. One of them was. Building and stuff like that, liquid in the basement and stuff like that. It's all nonsense. It's absolutely. You remember the cars that burst into flames hundreds of yards from the Twin Towers?
Uh-huh.
Did you ever look at that?
Oh no, I've gone through the whole thing. I started my research last April and went through all the movies, all the pictures. I'm ashamed to say I even bought that Judy Wood book and. I would say roughly a few weeks after, maybe a month after, I reached my conclusion on what happened that day. So,
right, okay, right.
So
Did an aircraft hit the Pentagon?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
No, I think there were no planes anywhere.
Good. I'm the same.
No, there was no plane
at Shanksville. There was no plane at the Pentagon. There was no plane at the North Tower, and there was no plane at the South Tower.
That's right. I agree.
Right. Okay, so what happened to bring this structure, which is embedded into gigantic foundations? This is the most sophisticated, highly protected structure that has ever been built.
Yeah, well, it's an office. Are you talking about... You're talking about the World Trade now, not the Pentagon.
The World Trade Center. Oh, yeah, the World Trade Center.
I would say Pentagon would be sort of the most protected building in the world, one would think. That and the White House, but yeah.
Well, it didn't collapse. The Pentagon didn't collapse for 20 to 25 minutes after the supposed impact, no?
Right. We don't know what happened there because we weren't there. That's what I like to say. I don't know. I don't know because I wasn't there.
Yeah, okay. But one thing is sure. Okay, but just rationally speaking, if we just look at what was being broadcast, what's being broadcast is actually some of it's happening days before. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the collapse of the building. I'm talking about people walking about on the lawn, picking up bits of rubbish. There were helicopters. Do you know helicopters were not flying above New York 15 minutes after the North Tower explosion? There were no helicopters. It's all a fake. There were no helicopters. There were no police helicopters. It's all a lie.
Yeah.
The helicopters are just toys. They're just superimposed on the all this thing about the press photographers flying above. This is a lie. There was a shutdown of all the airports. That's just an ordinary precaution. So all the film that was supposedly taken. By helicopters above the Twin Towers, etc. This is a big subject. We could talk about this for hours. But one thing is sure: if we believe that an ordinary aircraft could bring down a quarter of a mile high structure reinforced with a central column, a hollow plane full of kerosene. What kind of brains would believe that? It's like a mosquito hitting a net, you know?
Well, how about this? That means that all office towers are now in danger of collapsing if they get hit by a plane around the world, right?
Well, if you bring a kerosene heater into a building, it might melt. It might collapse.
That's right.
It's just ridiculous. Would a kerosene heater melt the steel of the kerosene heater? No.
Well, it doesn't. The best example of that is my barbecue doesn't melt into dust after I cook a steak on it.
Yes, well,
because propane and kerosene are about the same temperature, I think.
Propane and kerosene. I mean, these temperatures are far less than the melting heat of steel. Everybody knows that. It's just silly. We have to suspend the laws of physics to believe this nonsense. Besides, the images of the building collapsing, inverted commas, you don't see a collapse. You just see a disintegration. There is no collapse. Where is the collapse? There isn't a collapse. It's just a disintegration. That's why people are still dying from the radioactive material that was taken to that island, was Staten Island. It's still radioactive today.
Yeah.
What happened to the debris pile from quarter of a mile of floors? How did they find nothing except a couple of thousands of pieces of paper? What could possibly have destroyed that building times two? Answer: some weapon which literally turned the towers into dust. There were no DNA samples. The idea that DNA was extracted from these people is sheer nonsense.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I believe in DNA. How about that?
Yeah, well, you know, you've got this popular mechanics coming out with the false flag story and all the rest of it.
Yeah, the whole
thing is protected by lies. But if we can move on, if you want to musical history, so called.
Yeah, that's your specialty. I'll explain my position on 9/11 if you want later, but I would like to have you on the broadcast to talk about what I originally came to you about, because on a past broadcast somebody mentioned Mozart, that he was a composite if not a fake entity, and I had never heard that. I'm not big into arts, but I have followed sort of the Shakespeare entity and some of that research, and I saw a movie, I think, called Anonymous, that indicated that Edward de Vere was really the model, or maybe the author behind Shakespeare.
Well, I did talks on Shakespeare before, so I could talk about both of them. But I'd like to talk about Mozart.
The reason
I want to talk about Mozart is because I spent 20 years researching it.
Wow.
20 years.
Did you start off as a musicologist or just an art fan, or how did it start?
I studied music when I was younger, at college in London, and so I grew up to like this music. I studied this music. Mozart and the great composers, you know, this is the standard vitamins of when you're studying music or composition. You study harmony, composition. You come in contact with this wonderful music. Beethoven, Mozart, Bach, Haydn, Handel, Palestrina, Vivaldi, and all of these opera composers, you know, these geniuses, and it's like a pantheon, you know.
What instrument do you play, or did you study under?
I studied composition, but the instrument I played was clarinet.
Okay.
A long time ago. I mean, I was, you know, 20 at the time.
Okay.
But I always had a passion for music. Music is something I think very important, and I grew up to love that kind of music. I wanted to know more about it. Music can move you like almost nothing else.
No, I love music. I love music, and actually my wife loves Mozart. She's absolutely enamored by him. And when I mentioned this, when she overheard me talking about Mozart possibly being fake, she almost keeled over in her chair. So,
let's start at the beginning. I mean, how long you want to talk for? 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours? It's up to you. I can go.
Well, no, we're going to do a Reader's Digest. We're going to do a small version of it. I want to have you on the broadcast because right now the sound quality is not at the best level. So I want to have you on the broadcast on Saturday night. Can you stay up late Saturday night, or do you prefer early morning, which would be midday for you? It's up to you. I'm flexible.
Well, I'm flexible, but I can't do late at night because late at night it's just, you know, after about 11 p.m. my time, I get a bit tired, and it's just... Yeah.
Well, then, what I'll do is I'll schedule you, I'm going to say, for Saturday morning, my time.
Right.
If I start at 5, then that means it's 11 your time in the morning, and we can go a few hours for my, if you want.
Sure. I don't have a problem. Shall I give you a Reader's Digest sketch?
Yes.
Here.
Yeah, they have Reader's Digest over there, don't they?
They do, but nobody reads over here.
No, it's done now. As a media form, it's probably finished, just like it is everywhere.
Okay. Mozart was born in 1756. He died supposedly in 1791, at the age of 35.
Right.
Mozart is the so-called one of the supreme geniuses of Western music. He was so prodigious that he was writing piano concertos before he was born.
He would have had to be.
If you go to see the film Amadeus, The title track of, the playbill for the film Amadeus says, "Everything you've heard is true," right? about Mozart. And I believe that, and everybody else believed that, but Mozart was born in Salzburg in Austria, 1756, and was such a prodigy that he went all round Europe and everybody was amazed by his talents, and he wrote hundreds of masterpieces, including, you know, many operas, dozens of operas, dozens of symphonies, piano concertos. He hardly slept, and he died at a young age as a genius, unrecognized by the world. And wasn't it miraculous? And he is the transcendental, he's more than a genius. He's almost like a Superman, a musical Superman. And he did all these things and died at a very early age. And isn't it miraculous?
Uh-huh.
That's the official version of Mozart's life. The truth is completely different. Mozart never went to school in his life. He never went to music school. He never went to any school. He never gave a concert in his hometown, ever.
Huh.
Which is really quite something for a musical genius, no?
Uh-huh.
There is no record of him giving any concerts to anybody. It's all a pack of lies. It was his career was completely invented. The music that is credited to him or attributed to him is not by Mozart.
Uh-huh.
Not by Mozart. So all of this music is coming into the music industry at that time. But it's being rearranged, orchestrated, etc., by the music industry, who want to make a super Frankenstein genius who will be credited with all of this music, and thus create the image of a genius composer who wrote 626 masterpieces, ranging from 27 piano concertos, 50 symphonies, nearly 30 operas, dozens of masses, etc. But every single part of this is a fake.
Uh-huh.
Every single part of it is a fake. He died supposedly composing the Requiem, you know, the most famous piece of music was Mozart's Requiem, and he's composing this on his deathbed because the Romantic era wants to believe in these ideas. The Requiem was exposed as a fraud in 1825. It's not actually by Mozart. If you go to YouTube, and just go to YouTube and you type in there the Requiem of Michael Haydn. Michael Haydn is the brother of Joseph Haydn. Michael Haydn. Michael Haydn's Requiem, written 4 years earlier, contains a lot of the music that is used in Mozart's later so-called Requiem. Other music in Mozart's Requiem is by Handel and various other... Mozart did not write this music.
So, Mike, Haydn was a real person?
No, Haydn was a fake as well. All the great composers are fakes. Every single one.
So I found Michael Haydn Requiem C minor Finnish RSO. Okay, I found that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying okay. I'm gonna pass that on to my musicologist and have her listen to it just for fun.
Sure. Because
I can't analyze music for that. So
no, you don't need to. You just write the name down, Michael Haydn. Michael Haydn. Just type into your Google search Michael Haydn Mozart Requiem.
No, I found it. I found it. I got it.
Right. Okay. Then you have 27 of the finest, some of the finest piano concertos. Mozart surely was a famous pianist. He was a virtuoso. He was a genius. Everybody knows that. We believe that. You can go to hear a concert of 27 piano concertos of Mozart. How many of these piano concertos were known during Mozart's lifetime?
Zero, probably.
How many of them were published in his lifetime? The answer is three of them were published.
Okay.
In 1781, 1782. But they're not by Mozart. The three I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
The other 24 were published 10 years after Mozart had died. How many of these works are known to have been performed during the lifetime of Mozart? Answer, zero. How many performance parts are known from the lifetime of Mozart? Zero.
Huh.
You have several writers who are writing books about piano concerto. It's a specialized subject. In Vienna, one of them was called Koch, K-O-C-H, in 1792, the year after Mozart died. It's in two volumes, and it's talking only about piano concertos. It never mentions Mozart even once.
Hey, can I ask you, I don't want to interrupt your stream of consciousness here, but I have to ask, how did you get the idea, the germ of the idea that there was a problem with the Mozart story? What happened?
You come to a point, it's rather like the official version of 9/11.
Uh-huh.
You start arriving at so many contradictions, paradoxes, exaggerations,
uh-huh,
falsehood, that you think, wait a minute. There's something badly wrong with this.
Yes.
You know, I wanted to write a biography of Mozart, but the more I...
Because you liked him, I guess, right? You were enamored.
Yeah, the music was so amazing that I wanted to understand, where did Mozart go to school? I mean, that's an easy question.
Yeah.
And you find out that he never went to school. Ah, but he's a genius. Okay, he's a genius. Mozart never studied music. Ah, but Mozart was a genius.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia entry for Mozart right now, and I want to give you one tip that I use to determine fakeology or a fake story. And it may not be a really good tip, but it seems to be consistent. You know, we look for patterns to pick up on fakery. And one of them is, I believe those that are ruling over us, our controllers, are deep into the occult. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So one of the things they love to do is lace their stories with occultic numbers.
Yes.
And if you start reading any and every elevated or escalated or promoted story in the media to this minute, and I challenge you to go to Google News right now and look at the top story, you will see signatures of the occult numerology permeate the story. So I'm quickly looking at the Mozart Wikipedia entry, and I notice he's born on the 27th of January. 27, 27 adds up to 9. In 56, which adds up to 11. And I'm just quickly looking, skipping through, because, of course, not every single number will be occultic, but just the key numbers. They like to make the key numbers occultic. For instance, his yearly salary of his father was 450 florins, it says here. Now, of course, 4 plus 5 equals 9. So I'm just giving you an aside to your story that it appears that even unless those numbers are completely adulterated by the editors at Wikipedia, maybe you would know them better, but I assume they haven't messed with his date of birth, or his alleged date of birth has probably not changed in a few hundred years. I just wanted to point out to you that as you're talking, I'm reading and seeing all the Masonic numbers, the occultic numbers laced into his story, which certainly, for me, lends credence to your story, just on a very surface level.
Yes, yes. 4 years ago, I'm connected with several Italian music teachers, professors, and one of these, who's actually Dutch, another who's Dutch, he teaches in Barcelona University, composition, so he knows what he's talking about in composition, and I've known him for at least 10 years. And we were talking about whether Mozart was a fake. He said, Robert, this is amazing information. I know this Italian. He's going to Vienna. And he's going to go to the National Library of Vienna. The National Library of Austria in Vienna. I said, great, okay. Why is he going there? He's going to examine the actual music that was performed at the first performance of The Marriage of Figaro, which is a famous opera by Mozart, probably the most famous opera of Mozart. This was premiered in 1786. And this world-famous opera, The Marriage of Figaro, this is the original theater, what they call a score. You know, the conductor uses the score. And this is the actual score, and it's in two volumes in the Austrian National Library. And the strange thing about it, Robert, is that nobody has actually studied it for over 200 years. I said, yes, but they're selling the autograph, Mozart's autograph, his own, you know, what he wrote, and his autograph is on sale. Packard Institute in America, Packard, are selling the scores of all the Mozart operas, including The Marriage of Figaro. He said, yes, that's the so-called autograph, but it's not really the autograph. It was written long, many years later. After 1786, right? So what we're going to see in Vienna is the 1786 actual music that was performed on that day. And the two Italians are going to Vienna, and they're going to take a microfiche of the entire document. Are you interested? I said, yes, I'm very interested. So they got to Vienna. They paid, because it's very expensive to take these copies. You know, one page is okay. They sent, you know, a couple of bucks. But if you're talking about hundreds of pages in two volumes, it's several thousand euros. Yeah? And they took the whole thing. And this, the library didn't expect to, very happy about it. First, nobody had actually studied this manuscript for 200 years. The Italians took it back to Italy and started to analyze the music inside these volumes. And when they started that analysis music, they could identify that this music is really an arrangement of music that already existed. You're able to, you know, if you know how you're doing, you can tell that this music doesn't make sense. It's been stolen from somewhere, and it's hastily patched up to look like it's original music. Page after page, full of mistakes, full of clumsy errors. Anyway, so we published this book about Mozart, The Marriage of Figaro. No sooner did we do that, it was just a technical book, I can send you a copy of it.
Okay.
As soon as we published this, the Italians got a letter from the director of the National Library of Austria saying, you stole the manuscript. You stole these copies. You didn't have our permission to publish it. You didn't pay any royalties to the National Library of Austria. And we're going to take you to court for doing this. You see how carefully they will protect these things.
Yeah.
We had analyzed for the very, can you imagine, for 200 years, the world-famous Marriage of Figaro had never actually been studied.
Well, I can imagine, because
it's,
you know why?
It's crazy.
People always think somebody else is looking into things, right? That's one of the main things. Just like for 11 years, I figured someone else is looking into 9/11, and I don't really have to worry about it because they're going to catch those bad guys. And after 11 years, when something incited me to look into it, I realized that not much has been done into solving this issue. And no one, and the way things are going, it doesn't look like anyone is going to be working on this anymore. It's done. It's over.
You would probably agree. We are talking here about a crime so large, so enormous, on such huge scale that it involved, undoubtedly, it involved the executives of at least four television stations.
Absolutely. Yeah, and all it does do is show you the collusion. We've heard of crony capitalism before, but to think that the actual four or five competing, we're told they are in competition with each other, but to make the leap that they actually work together and they're actually all controlled by the same military media complex that we've always been warned about is beyond most people's comprehension. They just don't understand the level of collusion that is required. But it isn't any more than guys in a golf club kind of a club. You only need the top guys to sign on. And I don't even think you have to read them any of the details. They just know once they get there how they, first of all, they know how they got there, and they know that they're all of a sudden in an elite club, and this is kind of the thing that goes on in this club. So,
definitely. Well, I mean, the eyewitnesses, the supposed eyewitnesses, as you know from September Clues, the supposed eyewitnesses to the plane crashes just happen to be the wives or senior executives of the very same media groups who are actually broadcasting the news in the first place.
Yeah, the level of collusion is hidden in plain sight. It's there for you to see, and if you can't make deductions, then there's an issue with it. Yeah. So yeah, I have no problem with it, but I'm not surprised by you telling me that nobody looked into the opera of Figaro, because who would question something so sacred in the music is a genre?
Absolutely. Well, how about this one?
And why would you question it, right? Why would you? It's just like, why would you question that the Earth revolves around the sun? We've already had that debate. We've already figured it out. We don't need to spend any more time on it because we've told you that's the way it is. So move along. Just like we've told you there are nine occult planets revolving around in our solar system as well. Don't worry about the details. We've already solved it. Worry about the latest reality show, etc.
Yeah. If you fly from Florida to Los Angeles, simultaneously you have a plane flying from Los Angeles to Florida, they will both arrive at their different destinations and they will cross roughly halfway, allowing for headwind. It will take exactly the same time, more or less, for those flights to be finished, which rather suggests that the Earth underneath them is not revolving.
That's a big problem, isn't it? Yeah.
But it doesn't just matter with Los Angeles to Florida. It's anywhere else on the planet.
Yes.
North or south, east or west.
When you jump up in the air, you always land on the same spot, even though the Earth is spinning at 1,000 miles per hour.
Well, the Earth is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour, and that little cloud that you see floating above the picnic, which doesn't change its form, the atmosphere itself is supposedly spinning at 1,000 kilometers an hour west to east, as everybody knows, in inverted commas.
Yes.
And that fluffy little cloud just sits there for an hour or two on a beautiful still day, and the bees are buzzing, and that little cloud is there for the whole of your picnic.
Yeah.
I mean, how long? This is amazing. I mean, you know, do we see any symbol, do we see any hint from science that the Earth is really rotating or revolving on its axis once every 24? Only it's Galileo. It's Copernicus.
Uh-huh.
But if you actually read their writings, they don't actually produce any evidence of this. They just presume that it must be revolving on its axis. Now, you say, well, the evidence is on YouTube. Look on YouTube. You can see NASA have published, the Hubble telescope will show you the Earth is revolving. There it is. You see it moving? Is the image taken from something that is flying around the moon, the Earth, or is it the Earth that's rotating?
I address this that suddenly YouTube has become the gold standard of evidence, and I am highly annoyed and aggravated by this. Even John F. Kerry, who thinks he's the latest incarnation of JFK, is pointing that if you want to see the proof, just look on YouTube. But he takes the monumental leap that the information on YouTube is actually valid, when of course it isn't. And as far as the Earth and NASA are concerned, NASA has already illustrated to the world that they are absolute number one managers and manipulators of the space psyop. So nothing they say is valid in my mind. Not one thing. They have proven that they are master liars. They have been given the space portfolio to manage. So therefore, there's not one thing that you can look to as real, just because they've lost their credibility. They've forfeited their credibility. It's done. It's over. I don't know why they didn't change their name after the moon hoax, because at least people would stop associating. Right?
Their name is probably correct. NASA. Never a straight answer.
That's
you
right.
You don't get straight answers from NASA, because 4 years ago they removed the Earth rotation. They used to have a section on their website dealing with so-called Earth rotation, but there were so many people questioning the rotation of the Earth, I mean, with good evidence, that they finally got completely confused and shut it down. You don't find Earth rotation anymore on NASA website. Yeah, it's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah. You would be. It's illogical to believe anything they say. Therefore, you can quite easily dismiss out of hand everything that's happened subsequent, including the moon hoax landing. So the space shuttle, the Hubble, and last week this thing called LADEE. There is absolutely no reason to believe any part of it is real. So, so therefore, the evidence of the picture that they show us of the Earth is completely dismissed in my mind. In other words, I don't know what the shape of the Earth is now because everything we're shown is from a discredited institution. So I don't know what the Earth looks like from space because I'm convinced we've never been to space. I don't think we've been too much higher than a plane.
I agree with you about that. But there is one way, fortunately. This test was not accepted, unfortunately, by the scientific establishment, but it's a simple test. You live in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada has many amazing geological features. One of the amazing features of Canada, it has a mountain. I forget the name of this mountain. There's a mountain in Canada which has the longest vertical drop on the Earth's surface.
Okay.
It's not the tallest mountain.
Yeah.
But it has the longest vertical drop, even longer than any mountain in the Himalayas. I think it's something like 4,500 feet, something like that.
Something Masonic.
Now, I'm not sure if it's 4,000. I don't know exactly what is the.
Let me go into Google.
Yeah. The longest. Look there for the longest vertical drop on the. I mean, this is just not a dispute. This is just a fact. You know, I forget exactly, but okay. Look,
yes, it's in Revelstoke, in British Columbia, in the Rocky Mountains, Revelstoke. It says here.
Yes.
It's the Mount McKenzie Revelstoke Ski Resort. Okay. It's 5,620 vertical feet.
Okay.
Which happens to
5,620 vertical feet.
That's almost a mile. More than a mile?
Here is where Galileo and Copernicus can be demolished. And you might say, how? Okay, quite
simple. Yes, I would, because I'm not a great scholar.
Okay, if you take a ball bearing or a heavy circular object, let's take some marbles or some steel ball. To that location, 5,000, how many feet? 5,000 feet or whatever. You put them there and it conducts an experiment. The object of the exercise is to drop the ball from a fixed point 5,000 feet above vertical. And it will fall straight to the ground in an absolutely straight line.
Right.
But if the Earth is rotating and its atmosphere at a speed of about 1,000 kilometers an hour, something like that, or 900.
That ball should not land directly straight down then, right?
That's exactly right. That ball would then be traveling in what they call a parabola, slightly. You know, not much, but a parabola. It would definitely be affected by the west to east rotation of the Earth. And this is the ultimate test of whether this is one clear test, and it would be possible to photograph.
So you would have to suspend a plumb line straight down, correct?
Yes, you suspend a plumb
line. I'm on the phone
to conduct the test before you conducted the test. So you have a straight line drop. And you put X marks.
Don't make a noise. I'm on the phone.
Spot there, little penny there. Will this ball drop vertically straight down from a fixed position, or will it miss this penny? This is a very simple question. Now, if the Earth is really rotating, that what's the straightest point between two objects? It's a straight line. Now, what's the shortest point?
So it should be. It should land quite a few feet away from the plumb line, right?
It should do if the Earth and its atmosphere are rotating at.
But don't they have an explanation for that too?
The point is that nobody's actually tested it.
But yeah,
if photographs were taken, multiple photographs, you know, a 50 a second or whatever, all the way down the drop of blood, but not just one ball.
Yeah.
Follow it with another and another and another and another. Now, either that ball will hit every time that penny
guy in Europe
down on the valley floor, or it won't. If it does, there's something wrong with Galileo.
Your hands are clean.
Copernicus.
Right. I agree. Didn't they also did a similar test? It's a simple test as well about if the Earth was flat, completely flat, and that was a test over, I think, in England, where they had a channel, a canal, where they it was a straight channel of water where they proved that the horizon didn't disappear or something like that. I can't remember the name of the test anymore.
Oh, right. Well, have you heard of the Michelson-Morley test?
No. Maybe that's what I'm talking about.
The Morley test. Michelson-Morley was just before Einstein. Einstein was a fake, by the way. You probably know that.
Yes, I think so.
Albert Einstein was a fake who worked for Princeton University, Jesuit stuff. But anyway,
yes.
That's another...
Yes, no, I agree. Einstein was a patent office clerk.
Yes. Well, his wife was a good mathematician. She wrote most of his stuff, but that's another story.
Yes, I've heard that, too. I don't know if that's real or not, but, yeah.
Well, yeah. The Michelson-Morley experiment had predicted, this is about the turn of the century, that if the Earth was really revolving around the Sun, that the light would be slightly bent by virtue of the fact that there was interaction between gravity and stuff like that. But the Michelson-Morley experiment came up with the ridiculous idea. Only two things were possible. Mm-hmm. Either the Earth is fixed in space,
mm-hmm.
Either the Earth is fixed in space and the Sun is moving around the Earth, or Galileo and Copernicus are completely wrong.
Uh-huh.
But people can't accept that this is possible. It's just impossible.
Yeah, we've lived so many years with people accepting everything they're told, and it's because I think we've been subjected to the Prussian school system model where we're just told to regurgitate and recant, or repeat rather, almost in mantra form, so there's absolutely no time left for critical thinking. You only have time to memorize and repeat, so you're never given time to question. There's no creative thinking time allocated, and by the time you get through the system, you're a trained soldier, literally. You're a trained soldier for the military or a trained soldier for the corporate world, but you haven't had any time, literally, to smell the roses, and that's one. And that's deliberate.
Well, you could take it. Look at the judiciary. It's an unusual example, but if you look at the legal industry, today's modern legal industry.
No, I'm recording it.
They're interested. Or you might say, why would you use that as an example?
Throwing rocks at my trailer.
A court system is interested in getting to the facts of the case, but they're not actually interested in getting to the truth of the case. There are certain facts that they will accept, but other facts, especially facts which call into question...
No, I'm not broadcasting. I don't have enough bandwidth.
Facts, will never
because I'd have
be,
to take the call in and send it back out, and I hardly have enough
example.
Now right here. I'm on mute now while he's talking.
Where
I'm
a man
myself.
Falls behind with his mortgage. A man falls behind with his mortgage.
That's pretty good.
And
I don't have a
he
good
doesn't keep up with
I have
the repayment.
Shitty connection.
He will have his house foreclosed, or he'll be repossessed. Imagine if the man went into the court and said,
"Yeah,
I want to question whether there was a loan in this mortgage."
Right.
Imagine if somebody, this heretic walks into the court and says, I don't believe there was a loan. And they'll say, of course there was a loan. How can you possibly say there wasn't a loan?
Uh-huh.
Didn't you get the money in your account? Yes, I did. Wasn't the woman paid, Mrs. Smith? She sold the property. Yes. Well, there you are then. You did get a loan.
Uh-huh.
Then Mr. Smith says, shakes his head and says, we know that Mrs. Smith was paid the money. That's not the question. The question is this. Did you, Mr. Bank, did you actually lend your money to me? Yes or no? Uh-huh. And they'll say, well, there's the money went into the bank. He said, yes, I know it went into the bank. The question is, where did this money come from? And they'll say, well, scratching their head, they will say, don't be stupid. You have signed the mortgage agreement. Isn't this your signature here? You agreed to repay the loan? And then Mr. Smith will say, yes, it's true, I agreed to repay the loan, but all I'm asking is, where did the credit come from?
Uh-huh.
And they will say, well, what a stupid man you are. Of course we lent it to you. And he will say, prove it. Open up your books for the actual transaction.
Right.
If you had $100,000 and you loaned me $50,000, the books would show that $50,000 went out and you now have a balance of $50,000. Show me the books on that day. Did you really lend me this money or did that credit come from something else? And they will say, what are you talking about? What would happen if the credit for the mortgage didn't actually come from the bank in the first place? Uh-huh. It came from the central bank or some other source.
Or thin air, yeah. They just created it from thin air.
Yeah, they created it from thin air with the permission of the central bank.
Right. They created money.
They will say, Mr. Smith, how can you dare to say such a thing? You see what I mean? So they're interested in certain facts, but they're not interested in ever getting to the truth. If you examine the law of Canada, you'll find in the law there the power to force a bank to open up their books for inspection.
Yeah.
But the solicitors will never agree to that law. They will never agree to it. Why? Because it protects the public domain. They don't want you to know that banks don't lend money.
Uh-huh.
They want you to believe that banks lend money. Notice the word repayment.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I revisit China...
You go back.
I have been to China once before, haven't I?
Uh-huh.
If I revisit China... If I repay the mortgage...
That means you've paid it before.
Haven't I already paid the mortgage?
Right.
Yeah, you get this?
Yeah, I know all their words are there deliberately because they don't hide anything. Everything is above board. It's just that you don't know the meaning of the word in a lot of ways. And part of the scam is they tell you what they're doing to you. You just don't understand it. But they can point to it and say, it's all here. It's all in black and white, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hidden in plain sight.
It's hidden in plain sight a lot, and this is where we might differ because we're drifting off of the Mozart thing. But what one of the things my research has led me to is that these psyops are usually done within the parameters of their laws. So that So. Luckily, one of their laws is they can't kill people. So that's the good news that I've found out in 9/11. See, I don't think, in my opinion, anybody died on 9/11. You understand?
Yeah,
because
you're probably right.
Yeah, because that would be much harder to get people to go along with that, number one. And number two, it's illegal. So everything they did on 9/11, if you believe it's legal, okay... Mm-hmm. Well, that means that a lot of the things that you think they should be charged over Well, they can't be because they didn't do anything illegal. So, for instance, people ask, well, why didn't they scramble all the military planes? Shouldn't they be charged with treason? Well, if there was an enemy attacking? Well, if there was no enemy attack, then what they did was perfectly legal and logical. They can't scramble planes if there are no planes to go chase after.
Absolutely.
So, well, everything makes complete sense if you look at it through that paradigm.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you raised a very interesting point. If I go back to music, if you go to London, London is Westminster Abbey. Now, in Westminster Abbey, you can find very many famous composers, musicians, poets, playwrights, prime ministers. They have tombs in Westminster Abbey. It's a big honor to be buried in Westminster Abbey.
Uh-huh.
Now, the question is this. We're talking about, did anybody die or anybody not die?
Uh-huh.
The occultism goes further than this. Ask yourself this question. Who decided that when that man dies, he will be allowed to be buried in Westminster Abbey?
Uh-huh.
Who makes the decision? You can't make the decision when the man has just died, because he's probably not living near Westminster Abbey. He's living maybe in Scotland, or he's living in Wales, or
somewhere else.
Yeah. That when that body dies, he has to be buried in Westminster. So there must be a panel deciding who the famous men are for them to be buried in Westminster Abbey. You follow what I'm saying?
It's pre-planned. Right?
Okay.
Is it pre-planned?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pre-planned. It's laid out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's laid out in advance who is going to be buried in Westminster Abbey, and it must be, then they have decided who the famous people are even before they die.
Absolutely. You don't rise to the top. You're pulled to the top. You're promoted to the top. There's no such thing. The illusion, the simple illusions that anyone could be president of the United States or the American dream, those are illusions.
Mm-hmm.
They're not real. The president of the United States, the one they have now, is the most manufactured entity ever. And it's so obvious that before it looked like someone just stumbled into the job or they had connections. But this one is actually carefully crafted and manufactured, I think, from a very young age. He might,
definitely.
Who knows, he might have been even conceived with the royal jelly, for all I know. Because we have no information on who he really is. We don't know his mother. We don't know his father. We know nothing about him. Zero. The only thing we know is stories. And they're deliberately conflicting to cause cognitive dissonance. So
why do you think it was... Why did they arrange that? Why didn't they just pick up some guy who was born in Kansas? Or why did they do that?
Well, because, first of all, he's an actor. And he has to dance and sing just as he's prescribed.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
he's given a script. So to think, he has to meet the requirements of the illusion.
Yeah,
and that's very abstract for most people, but the words are placed into his mouth. They're not from his mind. As a matter of fact, occasionally when the sun shines on his telescreen, he goes off script, and the results are fairly catastrophic.
Really?
It's almost like a robot whose data card has been pulled. All of a sudden, we get lots of ums and ahs, and it's literally a default mode that is barely functional. So,
could you send me an example of that?
Well, there was one in Germany. I'll have to look it up because I don't really follow it that much. I don't really follow the direct day-to-day machinations of the president, but I've listened to a couple podcasts where they have played some of the tape. So if you want to go look on YouTube, Obama in Berlin, his last visit to Berlin, I believe the sun shone on his telescreen and stuttering ensued. So you might be fascinated to listen to that. So it's pretty
these things are so bizarre that we have the same things here with corporate politicians. Yeah.
Can I schedule you for? We're 6 hours. It's 6 hours difference right now, according to my. No, we're 5 hours difference. You must be in the west side of England or something. Are there two time zones in England?
No, there's only one time zone.
No. I have you at 10:12 p.m. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So we're 5 hours difference. So if I schedule you for 11 a.m. your time this Saturday in the morning, would that be fine with you? 11 a.m.
My time.
Yes.
That would be 6 o'clock your time.
That's fine.
6 a.m.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. 11 a.m. Saturday. But I don't want to talk about a subject that you're not especially interested. I mean, I can talk about Mozart, but that doesn't mean that that's all the only subject I can talk about.
We can go all over. Just look at my website, fakeologist.com. You'll see the subjects I talk about. I'm all over the place.
Talk about legal fictions. That's an interesting
maybe
subject.
Have you researched nuclear? Do you think nuclear is even a real science?
I know that Fukushima is full of fakery, and I know that all of this stuff are genetically modified crops and all this kind of bizarre stuff. I think that 90% of what we are told on the news is complete lies.
Yeah, I agree. Even the whole concept of GMO might have some major problems with it, if it even exists. Because the two main components of PSYOPs are fear and money. They always boil down to the same two things. So
I'm just trying to think of what I could talk about. If it's not Mozart, because Mozart's interesting.
Well, the main thrust of my site is 9/11. That's the reason for my site. So I'll always ask my guests about 9/11 at some point, because in a way it's a bit of a litmus test.
Well, how about this? That 9/11, if you look at the British side of 9/11,
yeah,
the involvement of, say, the BBC, Jane Stanley and
yes,
people,
I've seen all that.
You know, this is part of a gigantic international style. There's no doubt about it.
Well, of course. Well, the world is run by the intelligence agencies. They work together. They're just branches of the same corporation. The thought that we are at war with Russia or Israel is fighting Palestine is a complete myth.
They're working together.
How much more obvious do people need it to see? One day we're dining with Bashar al-Assad, and the next minute he's dinner. How is that possible? How could you flip over so quickly? How is that possible?
It's
not possible.
It isn't possible.
They're on the same side. It's like two brothers fighting.
But how do you think the future of critical journal? I mean, investigative journalism. Do you think it will come under real pressure?
I'm not sure it ever existed.
No.
I'm not sure it ever existed. It's getting more obvious that it doesn't exist by the day. There's almost, I have one or two local reporters that I've contacted to go into this with me, and they blow me off, and I've actually respected them over the years. So it really boggles the mind, because there's almost none of them from the old school left, and the only ones left don't talk about this, which leads to me to believe they are just participants in go along to get along. They just don't want to lose their livelihood, so they just keep their mouth shut. And it's nothing insidious other than a paycheck.
Yeah.
A very tiny method of control. So I understand the pressures. We're in their system.
Well, 30 pieces of silver is usually very persuasive, you know.
Yeah, well, the old saying, you can take the gold or the lead.
Yeah.
So let me, I'm gonna have to run now because I'm in the middle of something. Let me schedule you for 11 a.m. your time. We can converse before that. We can make some points among ourselves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll post this audio call today because a lot of people are interested, so they can just...
No, it's okay. It's just a general conversation.
No, I know, but a lot of my listeners love listening to this kind of stuff, even though we've covered so many things, not in any depth. But we'll have an official audio on Saturday where there's better fidelity.
You can choose, we could talk about the Olympic Games because I was.
I would love to. I've never heard that, so I'd love to talk about that.
Talk about the what about the Olympics? Because you know, not everybody wants to understand. You know, it was. I mean, Mozart. I could talk about Shakespeare. That was a fake as well. All the composers are a fake.
Yeah, I want to. Well, let's.
Beethoven was a fake.
I don't doubt it.
You talk about the fakery of Handel and Vivaldi and all these great. They literally created these people for the lives of about 10,000 composers, completely unknown, unperformed. The manuscripts are still in the libraries.
That's good news for all the unknown composers sitting at home, right? If they could ever break through.
Well, it's the same in the rock music world today. Well, yes. What chance has the ordinary musician got when everything has been written for these guys and they never wrote it in the first place?
Yeah.
But they get the credit for it.
Yeah. Okay, I got to run now. Let me schedule you, and we'll be in touch by email, and you can leave me some Skype chats, and we'll formulate a program for Saturday.
Sure. Maybe the Olympic Games London might be a very interesting.
Yeah, any links you have, let's exchange links and we'll discuss them for sure.
I'll post it right now. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.